You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Of course you know that the beautiful and talented Loretta Swit was one of the stars of MASH on television, and that she starred on the stage and the screen. And you may know that she's a tireless activist for animal rights, but you may not know that she's a very talented creator of visual art. Her paintings and drawings are the subject of a beautiful new book, Swithart, that's very clever, The Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit. Loretta Swit, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you so much. Well, I am so proud of this book. I really am so excited and proud of this book.
Well, it is a beautiful book. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I feel like we're old friends because you came to my living room every week for 11
and
years.
And bedroom and kitchen. And yes, I was all over your house. I remember it well.
So I feel like I know you well, but I didn't know that you were an artist, a visual artist, as well as an actress. When did you begin that part of your career, or have you always done that?
Well, yes, I have. In the book, I talk about it. I was 6 years old, and I was already doodling and sketching and painting and stuff. And I begged my mother to enter this little drawing that I did to a contest, a child's contest, and I won. I won first prize. I remember what it was. It was this darling little mystery bank. You had to figure out how to open it. And I kept it for years because it was so meaningful, but it was darling, this little treasure chest bank or something. But the winning was kind of very exciting for a six-year-old. My mother didn't know what to do with this little kid who would prefer to sit and draw and paint and whatever, then go out and play some kids' games, you know. She didn't understand why that was. Who is this child, and why isn't she behaving normally? But that's how it was.
Well, what led you to become an actress rather than a visual artist?
The art it was just something that I did for the fun of it, the beauty of it, the creating, and it was not the passion that I had for the arts that I serve now. I think because I've trained hard, long and hard, to become an actor, to have a foundation, to have a craft, and I sort of feel somewhere I deserve to be out there doing my things. I've never studied art, and I don't. So this book is a labor of love and innocence. I mean, I have obviously grown over the years with my paintings, but I've never trained, so I feel a little less deserving in a way. And it's got all to do with my charities. That I have the nerve to put it out there and have people like it and donate money to the foundation, or buy the book when the money goes to the foundation, and it all helps animals, which is another one of my passions. So I guess that's why. I always wanted to be an actor. That was my dream, and I'm living my dream, and I'm a very happy camper. This book came out of someone else's seeing my work. I would never have pulled my work together and gone to a publisher and said, "What do you think of this idea?" I didn't regard my work like that. But Mies Hora, my publisher, lovely, lovely man, saw me. We were passengers on a private plane. A mutual friend of ours was bringing us home from Florida, where I had been given a humanitarian award. So he was aware of my activism, and he was my fellow passenger on the flight back, and I was working on some things with my iPad, and he was seeing me leaf through some of my paintings, and he said, whoa, what? And I said, oh, I'm a watercolorist, or at least that's the medium I work in. and these are some of my paintings. You just show me some more, and I did. And he said, this is a book. And I said, really? He said, yes, do you want to do a book? And I said, sure, you know. So that's how it came about. Whereas with my acting, I have an agent, I have, you know, managers or whatever, and they send me out, or they just take a phone call, and I'm prepared because I've studied and I'm equipped to do the job. That's probably the difference. I didn't think I had a career in me to do artwork, but I was wrong.
Absolutely.
The way it's come full circle at me, I mean, the whole idea of doing animals, that's my passion, and nature. So I feel everything has sort of hooked up together, as it did when I did those incredible animals. There I was in front of a camera, which is what I do, and I was talking about animals and their plights and their achievements and our bonding, and that's what I do. You know, so that too was dovetailing into everything that I'm all about.
So how did it happen that you used the platform as an actress to become an animal activist?
I do think the first time I was explosive and adamant and visible and vocal about it was about the seal hunt, and I was really violent about that. I thought it was such a terrible thing to continue, and or the medieval leg hole trap, which I'm happy to say we no longer have with us, unless it's illegal. But was drawn into that because I was passionate and vocal. I found that because people respected me and what I did for a living, and they liked my work or they loved the series and so forth, it did give me access to apply my beliefs, to put my beliefs out there and enlist people because of the entree that you have with your work, with your celebrity. It's the only time being famous really has some substance to it. I mean, fame. What is fame? You're doing what you love. You're being paid well to do it, for the most part, and you're living your dream. So you believe strongly in something, in a cause. You take that fame and you use it in this brilliantly positive fashion where you can go out, pick up a phone. Well, can I do an interview? Is this CBS, ABC, or whatever? And can I talk about this? Or look at the attention the book is getting because people know me, because people like me, or whatever. So it's when it's really valuable to have a name that you can get attention to your cause and believe in it, you know.
Well, it's wonderful that you've done it, you know, that you don't just say, well, I could get a good table at a restaurant, but you also, you know, use it. You use your powers for good.
I never do that. They usually recognize my voice, but I never do that. I don't do that. That's entitlement, and I don't believe in that. I don't like it. But it's a blessing if you're using it in a positive way to get attention to something. I mean, we've been criticized for being political. That's unfair. We're human beings. We're citizens. We have feelings, and we are entitled to speak out about that, you know, like Meryl Streep did, or, you know, that sort of thing. It's unfair to tie our hands down. We're like you, and we need to say what we feel.
You won a couple of Emmy Awards for Margaret Houlihan.
If
that happened today, do you think you would find yourself compelled to say something if you were accepting an award tonight?
Oh, probably, yes. From time to time, when I'm being interviewed about the book, there have been some political questions. No, I have the right to say what I feel. I am a person, a human being. I am an American. I am a citizen, and I have an opinion. And yes, I would absolutely say what I feel.
Let me ask you something about MASH. You know, I think anybody that watched the show knows that your character, Hot Lips, Margaret Houlihan, changed a lot over the 11 years of the show. I mean, the character that...
You know, if I may,
yes.
Evolved.
Yes.
I know you said change, but that what you really mean is evolved.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of that evolution because otherwise we all evolved to some degree. She had the most evolution apparent because initially she was not. Larry Gelbart came to me and said, "We don't know where we're taking her yet, but just hang in there with us, stick with us, we'll find her." So there was a lot of evolving to do, and you cannot do the same joke for 11 seasons. You cannot have that same person for 11 seasons. You can't, and especially with that writing, things that they wrote for me in one episode had to affect her. We had to see that in subsequent episodes. She had to evolve. They were writing her smarter and heavier, and she could not, for example, as the prime example, is breaking off with Frank Burns. It was a funny joke for a couple of seasons because Larry was funny. We were funny together and so forth. But how much longer do you want to see the same silly situation? And it was silly, but she was being demeaned by that relationship. He was a married man. He was not an efficient doctor. He wasn't a gifted doctor. And she was embarrassed by his lack of skill. She admired the other doctors and their skill. And again, I would say to the writers, you know, you're writing Frank sillier, and he's turning into this, he's funny, but how can she continue to be with him and justify that, you see.
So you, in fact, helped steer this evolution, is what I wanted to ask you.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah? Uh-huh. Oh, of course, yes.
And they were receptive to that? They didn't say, go back to your dressing room and we'll call you when we need you?
No, they didn't say that, but it was a struggle, you know, to make my points. It is what it is. It's a sitcom. It's episodic. But, you know, now in syndication, you see them out of sequence. You see the evolution sometimes backwards. But that doesn't matter because it's there. It doesn't matter. You know, you watch other programs that are in a time capsule by clothing or hairdo or whatever. So that's what happens with reruns. But the important issues were resolved. And one year on hiatus, the writers called me and Gene Reynolds and Larry, and we had a lovely conference call about her future. How do you see her future? And I said, I see her going to Japan, to Tokyo, for R&R, and she meets a lovely guy who's single. He outranks Frank. And she falls in love with him, and she brings him back to the 477, and she's engaged. I said, you know, can you see Larry Linville? Can you see him? What he will do when he finds out that I'm engaged to a guy that outranks him? You know, so Larry tore off the doors to the mess tent when he found out. So, you know, we didn't lose any of the humor, and he stabbed me with the scalpel in the OR. So anyway, we did all of those things. They said, then what happens? I said, she can get married. And Gene Reynolds said, oh, witness, that's so that's so permanent. And I said, Gene, are you or are you not divorced? What is permanent about marriage? You know, so everybody laughed. I said, then she finds out he has been disloyal, and she gives him the boot. Geez, I don't have to take this. And then I said, as a joke, Hot Lips is back in town, and we actually called the episode that. She was enriched in a way by the experience, in that she found what her purpose was, that she didn't need another person to complete who she was. She was a terrific person, a terrific human being, a terrific nurse, the best nurse. I played her as the best head nurse in Korea, but her work filled her life, and she was better for the experience. She was no longer involved with Frank Burns. She learned she could walk away from a union that was not good. It was not healthy for her to be demeaned or diminished in any way. So I remember dear Alan Alda was giving an interview, and he was talking about that. He said, Loretta, you know, always struggled to keep the integrity of her character, blah, blah, blah. And he said, I guess she was right. I mean, we're a big hit, right? You know, so. but it was the first time that had ever been done in episodic television. So it was a big deal, and not easy to achieve with writers. They were like used to writing little episodes that you were the same, you know. So, but thank God it started in year three, because we went to 11.
Yeah, you had the time,
you
right?
You couldn't keep doing the same joke. For 11 years, I'm telling him he's a ninny and he's a no-lip wonder or whatever. How many times can I insult him and then go back? It's boring. So it was a wonderful thing that we started doing that sort of thing. But if you look at the other characters, they also evolved in their fashion. Jamie stopped wearing
a dress, right?
Yeah. And he became a serious clerk. He showed you that he was a serious person, and he stayed in Korea. Of all the people, the one who wanted to get out the most stayed there, married. The radar grew up. You know, we started with him and his teddy bear, and he grew up. And he went home to take care of his farm, and you know, they all evolved. And Emerson Winchester, David's role, David Ogden Stiers, brilliant actor. David was unfriendly, a stuffed shirt, a snob, and so forth. And in Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, he was one of us. Everybody really evolved. We had these brilliant writers, and they would listen to us. At one point, I remember, I think it was either Mike or Alan, or maybe the both of them said, we can't keep drinking the way we do and not do a show about alcoholism, about, you know, the effects and so forth and so on. And here we are. We're drinking up a storm, and we hear choppers. You know, God, let's show us sobering up. Let's, you know, I mean, everything was always so real. It was never, again, I never thought the word sitcom applied to us. We weren't a drama. We weren't a comedy. We were, if anything, a dramedy, but we were, I think, MASH. That's who we were. We were our own category. We created this situation that was different.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, continuing our conversation with actress Loretta Swit. Loretta Swit, you were speaking so passionately about these characters. You know, do you miss Margaret Houlihan and B.J. Honeycutt and Hawkeye Pierce?
I missed the people that I saw every day were still a very close-knit family, but we don't have, we've lost some of our comrades in arms.
Yes, just recently.
Yeah, just recently, too. And that took a toll. We are family. But not necessarily missing the characters at all, just going on to do other characters. And all of us, during the hiatus, went out and did other characters. I mean, that's how you keep fresh. You don't get bogged down with doing the same thing. And the joy of episodic is that you do get a little play every week. And you're faced with different combinations of those characters, different situations. And it's like doing a different play every week. It's the most ideal situation to grow as an actor.
You know, when you guys did, you mentioned the wonderful finale that everybody loved and watched. I mean, I think it was one of the most watched programs in history. How did they feel about you doing a finale? Nowadays, every show, you know, every show has a finale. But I think MASH, mm-hmm. that was pretty rare to have a finale.
A two-hour, two-and-a-half-hour, whatever it was. Yeah, that was really rare. And pretty much it was a collaboration with the network who wanted it. I mean, CBS really wanted it. I mean, we weren't canceled. We said we think we've been at the fair long enough, and we're going to leave before we stay too long at the fair.
It's certainly work to be proud of, and I can tell that you're very proud of it, and rightfully so.
Oh, indeed. I just they're my family still, and I'm going to see Mike and Jamie Friday. I mean, we're really, in the truest sense of the word, a close-knit family.
When you were doing MASH, that was at a time, I can remember when Saturday night was this amazing night of television.
Oh,
you had to be there.
You better believe it.
All in the family
people
and MASH and Mary Tyler Moore.
They just sat there. They didn't have to use the remote if they had a remote. They just sat and watched CBS. That was it.
Yeah.
It was a remarkable time. That was wonderful. They call it the golden age.
And rightfully
of
so.
Television. I think so. I mean, it's terrible, sad. We lost Mary, but
yes,
that was the epitome of we were able to show how good, how positive, how wonderful television can be. You know, just the outreach so important. I mean, this is a medium that reaches millions and millions and millions of people. It's our responsibility to make it good. And by good, I mean positive. Not only good and entertaining and funny and wonderful, but positive entertainment.
I have two questions about acting that I want to ask you. The first one is, you've acted in other mediums and you've been on the stage and film. How does it differ? Is it a different skill when you're acting on television?
MASH was filmed, so there is a similarity there to film. It's film. I've done three camera and live television.
Right.
That wasn't MASH. So that's fun. It's great fun. I did a lovely pilot for three camera. Just had a ball. It's a technique. It's a different thing that you have to get used to and so forth. I would say with all of them, there are different challenges and there are different rewards. For me, I'm a stage actress. This is what I do. This is where I'm happiest. I'm a people person, so I love having an audience. I love hearing that immediate response. I love it. I love live theater. I love to go and to be in it. More to be in it than to go. I love watching film. I would rather watch film sometimes than do it. But I prefer always where I came from was live theater. Television was new to me, and film that was new to me because I was on the East Coast and we did theater. You know, that was who we were, you know. And even today, producers, directors, whatever, they know that they're in store for a kind of camaraderie or knowledge. Theater training requires enormous discipline. For example, you get shot out of a cannon and you're on stage. That's it. You don't say, "I can do it better." You are prepared. The rehearsal process I find extremely exciting and creative, but you're there, and everything happens now, and the audience has to be seeing it for the first time. That's your responsibility. It's got to be fresh and for the first time, and that's a challenge. I mean, it's all a challenge. Now, if you're preparing to go on, there's only so much preparation you can make about the character and what's going to happen immediately. But at the end of the act, maybe you're crying or having some or laughing or you can't prepare for that. It all has to happen on stage organically.
Well, another thing that you did really well, and I'm sure you would do it still if it was around. I mean, there's still game shows, but not like there used to be every day.
I know,
there were these wonderful game shows.
Fun.
I miss those. And you were really good at those games.
Enjoyed them. The secret to being good is to enjoy it, you know. They were fun to me. They were real fun.
And there's a certain amount of acting there, too, even though it's you?
No, that's you. That's letting your hair down and having some fun. You know, at least for me, I don't think. You don't have a script. You don't. It's you as a person, and I think that's what the audience gets a kick out of. You know, watching their favorite actors and the parts that they played. And you know, they know me mostly, of course, from MASH, and there she is making an absolute fool of himself, fool of herself, playing a game show. You know what I mean? It's fun to see us like that.
I loved it. I miss it. One thing I want to ask you about MASH: the role of Hot Lips was created by Sally Kellerman in Robert Altman's movie in 1970, mm-hmm, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. So did you have to audition for the part, and did you have to think about what she had done?
You know, all I did was have a meet. The people they saw, I don't know who else they saw. They saw maybe 300 women, 200-300 women. And I was shooting Hawaii Five-O with my dear friend Jack Lord. I was there for a long time. It was a two-parter. And I missed all the flap about they're looking for this character. And I came back, and my then agent said, "I have an appointment for you tomorrow to meet Gene Reynolds and Larry Gelbart and Burt Metcalf." And he said, "Incidentally, did you see the film MASH?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Wonderful. Okay. Well, anyway," he said, "but it's just a meet. They want to look you over and have a meet. There's nothing to read. They don't have a script. They don't have sides even." And so I said, "That's fine." I was not at all nervous about a meet. And then, consequently, I eventually was told that I was going up with a lot of credentials because I had done the body of my work that far into my career had been on CBS. They were fans, I guess, and I lucked out. I did my first job was on Gunsmoke. Everybody watched Gunsmoke,
and it was
a wonderful part.
I remember you on Gunsmoke.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so I did that. There I was in Hawaii shooting 5-0, and
did a Mannix too, didn't you?
I did Mannix, absolutely, yes. And so, and also I did a show that didn't make it, I think it was on for a season or two, starring Glenn Ford, called Cades County.
I remember. That was like,
you know,
a 90, it was like a 90-minute show or something.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
yeah.
It was a special. It was a pilot, I guess. And anyway, I shot it at 20th Century Fox. So this was a CBS show. It was at Fox. So Fox also thought, gee, this girl would be a terrific Houlihan or whatever. So I kind of went up there not knowing that I had these credentials that they were taking seriously. And they told my agent what dates they were going to be shooting the pilot, and that they would let him know what they decided on. And in the meantime, I was offered a film role at Universal with Olivia de Havilland, which, of course, thrilled me beyond belief because I had been a fan. And my agent, out of courtesy, said that, because that was an offer, he called them. They sort of had dibs because they saw me first, but there was going to be a conflict in the schedule. So he called them and said, I have to tell you that there are dates that are conflicting with your pilot, and Loretta's been offered this film with Olivia de Havilland. And and they said, it's karmic. We were just going to call you. We've decided to go with Loretta. And that's how it came about.
Isn't that great? How did you feel?
Yes, it was.
How did you feel?
Did you have an idea
that MASH would be as fabulous as it was?
No. Listen, nobody could have predicted the phenomenon. I mean, it's not just successful. It's a phenomenon. It's never been off the air. This 45 years it's been on the air. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing. You could never in your best dreams about yourself have thought of such a thing. In fact, the joke, my as the then agent, he is now dead, but we had a running gag about it. When I got the first contract, they were for 7 years, and I balked. I said, my gosh, you know, 7 years of my life, and he said, don't be nervous. First of all, nothing runs that long. That was the first joke. And the second thing he said was, and if you're unhappy, they'll let you go, which is, of course, not true.
No.
But anyway, there we were. We kept chugging, and we kept laughing. I said, I thought you told me, you know. But, excuse me. Anyway, you could not have predicted that. Although, I will say this, that first day we all met, the guys were amazing and terrific, and what is that expression? You had me from hello. They did. They were just a special group of people that I knew I wanted to have in my life forever, you know, and do. But I would have to say that part was magic for me immediately. And then, of course, the magic continued, because as the years progressed, we had people leave and people replace and people come in. And we were so incredibly lucky to get a Harry Morgan. Hello. I mean, it was all just brilliance. And it just got better and better and better.
Mike Farrell was a pretty great addition to the show.
Oh, please. You're talking about my brother, Mike, my bro? He is the most divine creature ever walked the face of the planet. He's my dear, dear friend. Just love and adore him. He and Shelley just came out to Palm Springs to see me do 6 dance lessons in 6 weeks. We just closed, and he and Shelley came on Sunday, and then he immediately got on the internet and wrote the family and said, just saw our gal Loretta, you know, running across the stage and being wonderful and, you know, carrying on. And everybody answered, you know, well, you're surprised our Loretta was wonderful. And, yeah, I mean, the family just continued. But we're going to take it on tour, he said in the letter. They're planning a tour. If it's anywhere near any of you guys, do not miss it. It's just wonderful. And he gave us this great rave review. And there you are. I mean, we just continue. Yes, Mike and Harry and David Ogden. And I mean, it just... Jamie, of course, it's a beautiful story. Jamie was a day player during the first season. And they loved him, and he stayed for 11 years. You know, yeah. We were just, it was luck. It was lucky, happenstance, karmic, I don't know, serendipity. But those particular people coming together at that particular time made magic. It just... The writing was, it started with Gene and Larry. I mean, they're the titular heads, you know, and it just poured down from them. And then Bert took over and then carried the sword, you know. And the quality and the fervent attention to detail, to truth, they had integrity and they never let down.
This is Gary Shapiro from The Bookshelf on KSCO. We're chatting with actress Loretta Swit. We were talking about Gunsmoke a little earlier, and Gunsmoke seemed like a show that had that same quality in that most Westerns were sort of corny, and they wrapped it up in a little bow, which they never did on Gunsmoke.
I loved working that show, and... what lady who became one of my dearest, dearest friends also came to see me in Six Dance Lessons on Sunday. Pam Polifrone was the casting director of CBS at that time, and she was amazing. She was so, her expertise reached out. I mean, she knew everybody out there. It was worth giving your picture and resume to Pam. She looked at it, she studied it, she remembered it. She watched for you in different shows, and she had a head with names. And I remember one day after we got to be close friends, and she was still doing the casting. Rob was probably doing MASH at that point, and we were watching television, and a commercial went on, and she said, "Oh, there's Willow. I'm so glad he's working." It was a background person in a commercial, but she just was amazing. The expertise at her job, she was the best. And this is somebody who was casting that show. She cast a movie called The Shootist.
Oh, yes.
John Wayne. Mm-hmm. Betty Bacall. Yeah. A beautiful movie. Beautiful movie. His best, I think.
Harry Morgan was in that film, too.
Absolutely he was. Yes. You're good. You're a real movie buff. Yeah. So, yes, Gunsmoke, and no small detail. We have to give credit for that, for the casting, the excellence was everywhere in these shows, and it showed.
Loretta Swit, this picture of you on the back of your book, and you're holding these cute little...
Oh, those two little cubs. Oh, they were the cutest little things.
But,
they suckle your thumb, and they're babies. They're little cat babies, you know.
Well, you look absolutely beautiful in this picture. So, this picture was taken, 25 years ago, 30 years ago?
Something like that.
I saw a picture of you taken the other day, and you look exactly the same. What is the story? among your paintings, do you have a painting in the attic?
That is just dripping with blood and fading like a, melting like a candle. I'll tell you, it runs in my family. My mother passed at 106, and until the very end, she was getting coiffed. She was getting manicures. She was wearing little heels. This, I have to tell you, is an amazing thing when you're 100 and you're doing that for yourself and you're wearing little heels and you want to go out to dinner and you say, "Where are we going?" Or you're planning. She was like maybe 102, 103. She'd say to me, "So you know what I want to do next year?" You know, she was always talking about the future. But in terms of me, I'm happy. I think that radiates. I'm I'm doing things that I feel I was meant to do, that I think I have value, like the book, like the foundation, the Sweetheart Animal Alliance Foundation, where I'm, you know, getting money into that foundation so that it can act like a hub and spread out the money where it's needed to all these little shelters that are there without a name, but recognize them and again fund them, support them. I'm acting, I'm planning this tour with a piece. I love this piece. I love my co-star. It's a joy to be on stage and give that to the audience. He's so brilliant. His name is David Engel. He's wonderful. And together we do this piece and it brings laughter and joy and poignancy to the audience. That to me, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, I think, more than being religious, although I am Catholic and I do go to Mass and take sacraments and stuff like that, but I'm not, I don't do it all the time, you know, I'm not...
just when you're bad really, or what? No.
Well, I'm always bad, but I think what I do is noble work. I make people feel, I help them feel, I help them laugh and cry, and 6 and 6, I think, has weight. It has important messages for people. It talks about ageism in a way where you learn something about how a woman feels alone, aging without a husband. She feels unprotected and so forth. It's good. It's funny. She says to her dance teacher, people start to disappear as they get older. Did you know that? And he looks at her and says, well, I knew they shrank a little, which is, you know, the audience really enjoys. It's funny. But she goes back into being serious and says, no, you know, they disappear. People talk through you. They don't pay attention to you. And, you know, and that's an important lesson. I saw it with my mom. I was lucky to have her for so many years. And I saw people trying to disregard her opinion or her request or whatever, only because she was unprotected and older. Of course, she was so feisty, you couldn't do that with my mom, but I saw people try to do that. And that's wrong. And so I'm doing this piece that I feel is enriching and fulfilling, so I'm getting all of that too. It's not just the audience. I'm full of it too. So there's that. I'm a vegan. I'm a famous, noted vegan. Animals are my friends. They're not my food. And I'm doing a lot for them. I'm doing what I can for them. But I think it dovetails into my health. And I exercise. I love walking. I'm a walker. I walk everywhere. So all of these things, I think, contribute. I don't think, by the way, I look the same. I thank you for what you said. I don't think. I look in the mirror. I see that I'm a different, older person for me. But I'm essentially just very happy living my life. I'm doing things that I've always wanted to do, and I'm spiritual enough to appreciate the gifts that I think have been given to me, and I'm now being allowed to use in this very positive way.
Well, I'm a grateful recipient of all of the stuff you've been putting out over these years. This book.
I've been putting out? Are you kidding?
No.
Explain that to your audience. I don't put out for you, fella. Okay.
Sorry, hot lips. The book, it's a wonderful book, and it's called Sweetheart. And
yeah,
the watercolor artistry and animal activism of Loretta Swit. It's certainly been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for being with us.
Tell them they can buy the book online. Go on my website. It's sweetheart.com. There's a surprise. And you can be sure that what you pay for that book goes into the foundation and gets spread out to needy, needy animals. So there you are.
Well, it's really, really so much fun to talk to you. Thanks for spending so much time with me.
It has been fun. Thanks for your time.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. You can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Loretta Swit. Her new book is called Swithart, The Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.